Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Brian Caulfield on behalf of Petitioner Trump Marina Associates, LLC. Your Honors, the petition here should be granted because when the Board silently departs from precedent, its decision will not survive judicial scrutiny. This occurred twice when the Board discussed the rules and Liu's meeting with Spina. The Board has already found prior approval rules lawful. In Lafayette Park, the Board found a lawful rule requiring prior approval before using certain facilities at the hotel, and because it was not directly implicated Section 7 activity and there were legitimate business interests. The Board also found a lawful prior approval rule before employees could post on hotel premises in Flamingo Hilton.
And you have a case where the Board found upheld a rule that forbade anybody from speaking to the media?
Your Honor, the Board cases that they cite about the labor disputes are inapplicable to this situation.
Do you understand that to be what I asked you?
No, Your Honor.
Make it clear. Do you have a case that's not about bulletin boards or anything other than speaking to the media? Do you have a case that upholds such a rule?
No, Your Honor. There haven't been. But I point you to the Board's cases where they talk about labor disputes, and they're a bit misplaced here because the Board's focused in those cases is on the comments, not the rule. In other words, both cases are whether the statements that the employees made triggered the protection of the act. Mr. Spina's statements here are not unlawful. It was whether he didn't request prior authorization. That is where the violation comes in terms of the policy. The Rule 36 here has not been applied discriminatorily. And as this court noted in AdTrans, in the absence of any evidence where the employer is imposing an unreasonably broad interpretation of the rules, the Board's determination to the contrary is unjustified. Now, of course, if an occasion arises where the employer is attempting to use the rule in an unlawful way, the employees may seek review of the employer's action. But that doesn't mean the rule on its face is unlawful. And the Board
is a rule that is on its face so powerfully chilling is immune from scrutiny because no one will defy it.
I'm glad that you raised that, Judge Ginsburg, because...
I can't imagine why.
Well, no, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because there is no evidence of chill. Now, only after...
How would one get evidence of chill except by getting people to come forward and saying, I'm afraid to come forward?
But, the Board's decision does not discuss chill at all. If we were to do a word search in the record...
Now you're shifting ground, is that right?
I'm sorry?
You agree that the mere maintenance of a rule, even if not enforced, could violate Section 7?
That is the Board law.
You agree with that?
That is the Board
law. So it doesn't
law.
Have to be enforced?
That
I
is
thought a moment ago you said it had to be enforced.
No, that's the Board law. I agree with you that the Board law talks about if it chills employees. But here... The Board never analyzed chill whatsoever. There is not a reference to chill in the
question is, isn't it, and leave aside the Board's cases, because our own cases have even higher precedential value for ourselves. Mm-hmm. The question is, if the Board concludes that employees would reasonably construe the company's confidentiality language to do this, right? It's whether reasonably, not whether any, I'm citing from our opinion in Cintas, doesn't matter whether there's evidence of particular. The question is whether a reasonable employee could read it that way, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Now, the Cintas case is a little different because that rule directly restricted Section 7 activity. It prevented employees from speaking about other employees. In Cintas, they called the employees partners. And so that rule directly implicated Section 7 activity. The media rule here does not.
Well, obviously, people in the management thought that it did restrict speaking to the media about a labor case. Isn't that right?
No, that's not right. In fact,
no.
What had happened was and Liu testifies to this. Liu says, "Well, there's nothing wrong with the statements that Spina made to the media."
But the ALJ said several of respondents' management officials saw the story and expressed concern that Spina may have violated respondents' policy.
That is correct, in the sense that he released statements to the media before receiving authorization.
So are you saying, and let me just clear about the authorization, then you agree that the rule restricts statements to the media without prior authorization about labor issues, including about whether or not the employer committed unfair labor practice?
Your Honor.
You agree that the rule restricts that, or that somebody could reasonably read it as restricting that, right?
It could reasonably be read as that, but what the legitimate business interests for the rule and which the board must look to are there. In other words...
What is a legitimate business interest in preventing employees from telling the media that a court or an ALJ has found the employer in violation of the NLRA that overrides Section 7 rights?
Well, you're correct that those statements are protected,
right,
and that they could be made to the media. However, the employer would not know that they were being made to the media. They could, an employee could go and make any statement without a rule like this, which could implicate...
Right, they could do that, and the rule says they can't.
That's right. And so, without this rule, the business interests of the marina aren't protected. They
What business interest is it that they have in employees not being able to go tell the media the ALJ ruled in our favor that the company had committed unfair labor practices?
You're correct in saying that. However...
No, I'm not. It's a question.
Well...
I can't be correct or incorrect. What is the business interest in preventing that from happening?
No business interest in that. The business interest comes with respect to something that is not protected by Section 7. And the board and the courts do not require...
But this rule is apparently broad enough to cover the Section 7 statement made in this case.
And Your Honor, no doubt that it is. The argument is that there is not a need for a more narrowly tailored rule. The board has said this. It does not require the employer to go ahead and anticipate and catalog every possibility where a rule might implicate Section 7 activity. And the board must.
Nobody's suggesting, as I understand it, that it does have to analyze every possible.
Right, and it comes when...
You narrow the rule down to some point that you have a legitimate business interest in, and then you don't worry about all the other instances.
You could
say that nobody but these four people are authorized to speak on behalf of the casino. You can say that nobody can release trade secrets. You could do those things with very narrow rules. And you don't have to catalog all of the possible other things in the world. You just leave that universe out there where it is.
But the board does not require that. And for us to do that, we may not...
The board doesn't require you to have a rule at all.
Exactly.
Right. It doesn't require you to have a rule at all.
But when it does...
What's the relevance of the board not requiring that?
But when it does, Your Honor, when an employer does have a rule, the board is to presume that it is not unlawful. And when there are legitimate business interests, they are to ask themselves,
we've been begging you to give us legitimate business interests preventing employees from speaking about unfair labor practices or from telling the results of an ALJ hearing. You keep coming back saying when they have legitimate business interests. As far as we know, they don't have any.
Well,
you haven't told us about any.
Holsizer already says it's about confidentiality, proprietary. She says that it's just a few examples. She doesn't testify to all of the potential business interests. The bottom line is that when there are business interests, the board has to analyze it, and they didn't. And moreover, when it's not been discriminatorily enforced, and here, for instance, there's no discussion of chill at all. They didn't analyze to find whether there was chill or even assert that the rule applied to chill protected activity. Now, post hoc rationalization, they're saying the rules chill. That's not what they did in the decision at all. If we go back to the decision, they departed from its precedent by not even telling whether or not there was chill or that it was applied to chill protected activity. Your Honors, I see I have my 30 seconds left. With respect to the interrogation, the board factors were not analyzed. We talk about the place was not coercive. It was used for training, storing supplies, having food out for the holidays. Spina was an open union adherent, and when there are open union adherent cases, they apply the same factors but don't necessarily find a violation. And in terms of the company hierarchy, Lou was not the owner, as was in Rossmore, and we ask that the petition be granted.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Do we need to hear him? I guess we do. Morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Greg Lauro for the Labor Board, asking the court to fully enforce the board's order because its findings are reasonable, supported by record evidence and settled law. As Your Honors discussed this morning, settled law holds that employees have a Section 7 right to speak to the media about labor disputes, and also that where a rule can be reasonably construed as interfering with such protected conduct, its maintenance is unlawful. And the facts clearly make such a case here, where the rules are so strikingly broad. One simply tells employees that they may not issue any statements to the media absent prior company approval, where the other essentially says, unless you're one of these four company managers, you may not speak to the media. There's little doubt that employees would reasonably construe those rules as barring them from engaging their right to speak to the media about an ongoing labor dispute. And as Your Honors noted, that
you jump to an ongoing labor dispute. It would put them on notice that they shouldn't speak to the media without prior permission.
Yes, Your Honor. Right.
Not about one thing or another, but just generally.
That's right, Your Honor. You are correct. The rule is so broad that it simply says don't issue any statement to the media. And that phrase, any statement, would by force include statements about an ongoing labor dispute. You are correct. And
unless the rule in its context would not be read that way by a reasonable employee.
That's right, although the employer points to no such context here limiting the rule. The rule simply says don't make any statements to the media without our permission, or do not speak to the media unless you're one of these four company managers. And in those circumstances, the board reasonably found that the rule would tend to chill employees in the exercise of their statutory rights due to its overbreadth.
I thought the board went further, or at least the ALJ went further, to say that the employer itself read it that way.
Seems yes. Isn't that
a little bit stronger even than the words?
The employer
itself reads it as requiring prior authorization in this particular case.
That is correct. There are, in that sense, two sets of facts strongly supporting the board's finding. One, as we just discussed, is the broad language itself, which is sufficient on its own to show how employees would reasonably construe it. And then on top of that, and contrary to what you're hearing from the company today, its own witnesses, its own managers decided
the ALJ's language on that was adopted by the board. So it has become board language now.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, but there are both those supporting facts, the broad rules themselves and how the company, in fact, interpret it much like the board did. And as I just wanted to point out a couple of quick things, I mean, it's not necessary under the applicable law that there be evidence that the company discriminatorily applied this rule or that employees were actually coerced. The test is an objective one. Would they reasonably be coerced? And the board reasonably found that they would be. So unless Your Honors have any other questions, I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel. Give you back 1 minute for rebuttal.
Your Honors, and I just want to go back to the point that this is wonderful that the board is saying this now, but the fact of the matter is it should have done that in its decision when it issued it to discuss chill. It hasn't done that.
It didn't use the word chill, but it reflected, or the ALJ did, adopted by the board on the applicability of this rule to the Section 7A rights of the employees, right?
Repeat that, Your Honor.
It didn't use the word chill, but the board's language did refer to the applicability of this rule to silencing Section 7A speech, didn't it?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. When it doesn't discuss how chill affected the employees or that it even occurred.
I find that respondent's rules likewise interfere with the Section 7 right of employees to communicate with the public concerning an ongoing labor dispute, right?
Interfered with Section 7 activities.
That's reading from the language, right?
Interfered, but doesn't affect.
Indeed, this case is a stronger case than Crown Plus. Is there something about chill that makes it a magic word that we can't discern the same thing from other words?
Your Honor, it's just supposed to be addressed by the board, and we ask that the petition be granted because the board didn't do that.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Give us a recess.